Hello, and welcome to Sobercast, where we provide AA speaker meetings and workshops in podcast format. We're an ad-free podcast, and if you enjoy listening, please help us be self-supporting by visiting Sobercast.com, look for the donate link, and drop a dollar or two into our virtual basket. We hope you enjoy the podcast. Have a great day.
Fortunately, we have a set of traditions. We have, thus far, we have succeeded in Alcoholics Anonymous by staying true to our purpose. And, our society is based on the traditions that we're going to discuss just now. And like true alcoholics, we didn't like them when they first came out. I mean, if you read AA history, you know, they all had a terrible time getting alcoholics and drunks interested in adopting these traditions. They didn't want to do it. And the stories abound about Bill Wilson going out, and he was invited to speak only on the condition that he not mention those damn traditions. And nobody wanted to hear him. They got tired of hearing about him. He wrote a lot about him in the grapevine, but they just weren't well received at all. And however, now, most of us understand that these traditions are what have allowed us to thrive. And let me give you a little quick example. We have a tradition that says the only requirement for membership is the desire to stop drinking. When AA was about 10 years old, back around 1945, the members of the people in New York sent out a questionnaire to all the groups that they know of, and they said, please tell us, what are the requirements for membership in your group? And all the groups that replied sent their list of requirements in for membership in their group. And the New York people made a composite list of these requirements. And they found, looking at that list, that the founders of Alcoholics Anonymous were not qualified to be members. That's what we've done in 10 years, with no traditions. There were traditions about dress, about language. I mean, there were requirements about dress, about language, about all kinds of things. And so Alcoholics Anonymous, in what I think was one of its finest moments, stood up and says, our judgment is no better than it's ever been. Look at this. So they came up with this tradition that says the only requirement for membership is an honest desire to stop drinking. And that was in place for a while. And then it occurred to somebody that drunks don't have an honest desire about anything. They don't have an honest anything. We're some of the most dishonest people in town. So we better drop the honest part, and we just made it the only requirement for membership is a desire to stop drinking. Not that we will quit, but that we have a desire to stop. I used to go to a group, having a job really plays well with this program, but back in the good old days when I was unemployed, for a year and a half, I used to go to a 7 o'clock meeting every morning. We had a guy who went to that meeting named Don. No, Don was there every morning. And when Don was taking his medication regularly, like he should, he was pretty sane, pretty reasonable. But occasionally Don would forget to take his medication for a few days, and heaven only knows what might come out of his mouth. And one morning we were sitting there, and Don raised his hand insistently, and that was usually a good signal that this may be interesting. And Don was called on. And Don said, and this is not as wild as he's ever been, it was just one I happen to remember. Don said, I know what you're all doing. I know. You're not fooling me. You're all pointing your electronic watches at my genitals to weaken me, and it's not working. And I know who made you do it. Frank Honeycutt made you do it. Well, Frank Honeycutt is my sponsor. He's been sober 31 years, and he's just a prince. He's one of the best members of Alcoholics Anonymous you'll ever find. And Don went on for a while in this same tone, the same bizarre stuff. And after the meeting, some people came up to Frank and said, what are we going to do about this guy? And Frank said, what do you mean? Well, he's crazy. What are we going to do about him? How are we going to get rid of him? And Frank says, we're not going to get rid of him. He is a self-admitted alcoholic who has a desire to stop drinking. What do you suggest we do with him? He has just as much right to talk in this meeting as any of us. And that is a miracle. That is the kind of thinking, and these traditions are what allow us to stay together. And just as they allow groups of alcoholics to stay together, if you use the ideas in these traditions, they will allow relationships not only to stay together, but to thrive. You know, a lot of us come in, the Alcoholics Anonymous, thinking that, we really know about a lot about life, about things that we don't really know, and we think that our judgment is a lot better than it is. And the key words in those sentences are think. You know, we like to think as alcoholics and as sick people. Not only, you know, when I talk about alcoholics, I mean not only the ones who have the disease of alcoholism through drinking and all, but the ones we have infected with it. You know, like our other family members. And you know, we like to think a lot. And one of the points we want to drive home today is that we have to do something. You know, thinking is not going to get it. You know, we have to do something. And so what do we have to do? Well, there used to be an old man down in Laguna named Chuck, and he used to say, you cannot think your way into good living. You have to live your way into good thinking. And so what we're saying is that, you know, if you want self-esteem, you must do esteemable things. You can't think esteemable thoughts. If you want respect, you must be respectable. You must act in a respectable way. If you want self-respect, you must act in a respectable way when you're alone and nobody's watching. You know, if you want integrity, you know, what is integrity? Integrity to me is the difference between what I say when people are around and what I do when nobody's watching. The difference. If there's any difference there, then I don't have much integrity. If I don't do when I'm alone and nobody's watching what I say I do, or what I do when somebody's watching, then I don't have much integrity. So we have to look at that. Okay, we're going to be talking a lot today about action, not about thinking or wishing. We also have to take a look, and we're going to, some of the baggage that we bring into our relationships. You know, I have a friend that says, all emotional baggage must sit under the seat. And, we're inviting each of you to look at the baggage you bring into a relationship. You know, and you bring a lot of it, whether you've ever thought about it or not. You know, I brought a lot of dysfunctional behavior from my family, you know. And there's also a lot of functional behavior from my family that I brought with me. You know, like, there's a lot of functional, not necessarily dysfunctional behavior, but, you know, you have preferences in food, for example, and how it's prepared, and how it's served. We have ideas about how to make a bed, and how to fold socks and underwear, and what drawers they should go in, and whether or not underwear should even be folded, or whether socks should be folded. And we have a lot of attitude towards institutions and groups, and some of us are Republicans, and some of us are Democrats, and sometimes Republicans marry Democrats. And we have a lot of ideas about education, and we have a lot of ideas about religion, and we have a lot of ideas about gender and gender equality. And we have a lot of baggage that we bring in concerning sexual abuse, for example, both physical and emotional sexual abuse from family or from previous relationships. You know, many of us were treated well at home and have been abused very badly in previous relationships that we've been in, and have been the abuser in many cases. We have emotional and mental abuse that we brought into relationships. You know, some of us are fond of going around telling our mate that they're lazy or stupid or incompetent or something. And, you know, and it's really tough to have a good relationship when you do that. Some of us are guilty of perpetual, relentless nagging about anything, whatever's handy. Some of us have good habits and bad habits that offend the other. You know, like some of us are smoke and our partner may not. And some of us have some good or bad eating habits, or have some really strong, well thought out ideas about exercise, or other just living habits. We also have some ideas about personal hygiene. And we have different ideas about how to dress, and how we should dress. And we all have some fundamental attitudes that are usually in the form of sweeping generalizations that all men are, or all women are. And these are nice to bring into arguments if you want it to go on for a long time. And so, you know, coupled with all those things that we bring into relationships that have to be hashed out, you know, most of us are either alcoholic or have been exposed to alcoholism, and that has its own set of interesting symptoms and side effects. And so this sort of thing is a load to carry, you know, because some of these attitudes are very crippling. They're not so much crippling to my mate as they are crippling to me if I have them, okay? Because it prevents me from having a happy, warm, and loving relationship with my mate. So, as alcoholics and as people who have been infected, that we have infected with our disease, you know, we have a lot of things that we need to look at. So after all of this teeing up, you know, there's a lot of other interesting stuff that I'm not sure I want to go into today because I'm not sure how interesting it is to you. It is fascinating to me. You know, like I have been watching, for example, I'll touch on it briefly. They're doing some, I have a different sense of humor. They're doing some interesting research now, and our lofty scientists are finding out that men and women think differently. And they have been doing some, physiological mapping of the brain structure of men and women. And they have found out that men, their brain is wired differently than women. And women tend to have a sort of an emotional filter that everything goes through that men don't have. And so they're beginning to conclude that men and women are really different. I wonder if it's our taxpayer dollars that are paying for that. Anyway, after all that teeing up, I'd like to go ahead and get started with tradition one. And what we're going to do is I'm going to take one, and Polly's going to take two, and I'll take three, and Polly will take four. And once again, I want to invite any of you, if you have something that you feel like needs to be said, or have a question, or anything you want to interject in this, please feel free to do so, because we'd be delighted for you to interact with us. Okay. Tradition one says, our common welfare should come first. Personal recovery depends upon AA unity. You know, we might also read that for purposes of this, what we're doing right now, is that a healthy relationship depends upon the unity of its members, the people who are in it. So, you know, first let me clear up a little something. I often hear people refer to in relationships, well, my program or her program. And one of the things I'd like to tell you is that Polly doesn't have a program as contrasted to Dave's program. Polly and Dave use the same program. The program is found between pages I and 164 of the book of Alcoholics Anonymous. And we don't feel that the program of Alcoholics Anonymous or of Al-Anon is a cafeteria from which selections are made. You know, we feel like there is a program, and if you want the benefits of that program, you must fulfill the conditions, all the conditions of that program, and you must keep the faith with that program. So these are cohesive programs you know, the Big Book says we have Alcoholics Anonymous, there are more than 100 men and women who have recovered from a seemingly hopeless state of mind and body to show other alcoholics precisely how we have recovered is the main purpose of this book. See, so we're going to assume that you and your mate share some kind of program. So to begin this tradition, ask yourself first, do I like and do I respect my partner? If the answer is no, perhaps you should reevaluate what you want in a relationship. I mean, unity has got to begin with each person. You know, you have to want to be unified. And you have to want to be unified not only with your partner, but in our estimation, you have to be unified with a higher power that's found within each of us, which doesn't compromise your ability to have a higher power of your own understanding, but you must share the idea that a higher power is a part of your program and it's a part of your relationship. If you're following the guidance and the will of God as you understand Him, you're more able to participate in a healthy, loving relationship. Unity means sharing your views. Unity means not insisting on having your own way. It means not insisting on promoting your own approach to life. And it means that you must achieve some kind of unity in the three essential areas of a relationship, particularly are the three essential areas of a loving relationship. And that is the intellect, the emotions, and the genitals. You know, there should be attachment in all of these areas. And if you should find your partner intellectually stimulating and emotionally attractive and sexually enticing. You know, that is a healthy relationship. That is the way I find Polly. She's my rock, and she has a very unifying characteristic about her. She is a very unifying person. I admire Polly. Truly. I like her. I just really like her. We were good friends for a long time before we were romantically involved at all. I just really like her. She's fun. I think she's beautiful. When she wants to be, she can be very sensual. She's fun to be with. And you know what? She doesn't give me a lot of attitude. And I can't even tell you how grateful I am for that. But I learn a lot from Polly. You know, I watch Polly operate, and I learn a lot from her. She does a lot of things that just amaze me. I'm absolutely certain that some of the things that she does going in are some of the dumbest things I have ever seen in my life. You know, there is absolutely no way this is ever going to work out. No way. We took Polly's car in one time. We were going out of town for some place, and we took her car to this shop. And we didn't really know these people, but they had been recommended, highly recommended by a good friend. So we take the car over there, and there's something wrong with it. And we'd had the car evaluated someplace else, and he wanted $200-something to fix it. So he took it in here, and she's talking to this guy, and this guy says, well, okay, we'll take a look at it and see what's wrong. And she says, well, you know, we took it to the Honda place, and they wanted $275 to fit. I'm thinking, don't tell him that. And she's just real upfront and honest with this guy, what the people at the Honda place told him. See, and everybody knows that's a dumb idea. Everybody knows not to do that. You know, that's the way to get ripped off. This guy, all he's got to do is come in at $250. And, you know, and you think you got a deal. And he may not even do anything. So that's my thought. You know, don't tell him nothing. And she's just telling this guy everything about it. Just totally trusting this guy. And we don't even know him. And so we take off and we leave and we call Saturday to see how the car is coming. And the guy says, oh yeah, I found the problem. It wasn't nearly as bad as you thought. It's going to be about $120. You know, I was sure it wasn't going to work out that way. See, so I learn a lot from Polly. She's upfront with everything. She's honest, and it works. You know what? It gives me encouragement to try that. And so once in a while, I try it, and it works. You know, it's the darndest thing you've ever seen. So the tradition of unity is about us. It's about me and Polly. It's about our house, not her house or my house. It's about our bank account. It's about our dogs and our cars, our kids, our marriage. And this is a tough attitude to have for people like us who tend to be selfish and self-centered. You know, it's all about us. relationships can go on benders too, and you know, and you can't always have it going like that. So, for tradition, while we have a little checklist. We have one for each of these guys. And, so our little checklist for tradition one is this, you know. And these are questions we encourage you to ask yourself about your relationship. You know, what am I willing to sacrifice for our relationship? How important is it to me? What effect do my actions have on my relationship? What effect do my actions have on my family? On our family? Am I a giver or am I a taker? Do I unify things or am I quick to criticize and slow to praise? I used to be very quick to criticize, and praise was something I just didn't do when I got here. If I gave you praise, it meant you had the upper hand. I was relinquishing control if I gave you praise. I didn't do it. I was fairly quick to criticize. Do I use silence as a refuge or a punishment while expecting Polly to read my mind? Ever done that? You know, Polly talked last night about toughing up as though girls had a patent on that. Let me tell you, not true. I can puff up as good as any girl you've ever seen. You know, and you just sit there in your silent rage and you just try to manipulate the whole thing just by looking angry and mean and, you know, and see if you can get everybody to scurry around and say, "What's wrong, dear? Are you okay?" And, so, you know, do I use that? Well, I used to. Do I listen when Polly has something to say? It doesn't mean do I keep my mouth shut while she talks. It means do I try to hear what she is saying? Do I really listen to what she's saying? And do I admire and approve of my mate? And does she know that I do? And is the way she's supposed to know is because I tell her? You know, love is an action. Love is not a thought. It's an action. It's not a feeling. It's an action. It's not an idea. It's an action. And if somebody loves you, you know they love you because their actions say, "I love you." And while we all like to be told, while we all like to hear the words are empty and hollow if there are no actions to back it up. Am I a healing, mending, integrating force in our marriage, or am I divisive? Do I try to play one thing against another? Am I a peacemaker, or because of my own insecurity, is it critical to my ego that I be right? It used to be very critical to my ego that I be right, and I'm telling you, it's still more important than it ought to be, and it's more important than I wish it were. But at least I know it today. The absolutely insatiable desire to be right is just, I mean, there are people who will go to any lengths, and I used to be one of them. Because of my own insecurity. Well, and then what comes next is, what must Polly do to accommodate my insecurity? What actions does she have to take that are just, she's just taking them to accommodate my insecurity? Or my fear, you know, or my ego? Can she have male friends? Can she go wherever she wants? With whomever she wants? Mostly whenever she wants? And the answer has become, yes, she can. You know, I have no requirements like that on Polly anymore, which doesn't say anything that there was ever anything wrong with what she did. You know, it was me. I was the problem. My insecurity and my male ego was the problem. You know, now Polly operates pretty freely and has for some time. She does not have to ask me if she can go someplace or whatever. She can have anything she wants for a friend, anybody or anything. It can be male or female or billy goat. It's all right with me. She can have any, she not only can't have male friends, she does have some. And she goes to dinner with them, goes to lunch with them, whatever. And that is just not a problem anymore, but it used to be. Do I try to be understanding when Polly rubs me the wrong way, or does something that upsets me, or am I abrasive and rageful?
Well, I have become pretty understanding. You know, we had our garage was broken into a year or so ago, it really wasn't broken into. Well, I came home late at night from speaking at a meeting and forgot to close the garage door. And the garage light was on, illuminating my mountain bike and my backpacks and all my power tools. And somebody said, "Man, look at all those things in there." And we got up in the morning and those things weren't there anymore. And, you know, I could see how badly Polly felt about that. You know, it just really, she felt so bad about that. And I was comforting her because I was ripped off, and you know, and I felt like that's the right thing to do. She feels terrible. Why make it worse by yelling at her? You know, why make, go, it's not going to bring anything back. Why make it worse by yelling at her? Do I spout platitudes about love while indulging in and secretly justifying behavior that bristles with hostility? Do I sneak around and do things that I know she won't like? Or that violates our values? See, we have a set of values. Our relationship has a set of values, and I think each of us as individuals should have a set of values. These are my boundaries. You know, if you walk up to me and ask me what I stand for, I believe I should be able to tell you. I believe I ought to stand for something, and I believe I should, what I stand for. And so, we have values also as a couple, as marriage partners, as mates. We have values there. Do I share all of me, good and bad, or do I have secrets? I'm telling you, I encourage you in the strongest way that I can to have some secrets. I absolutely do not endorse emotional nudity. I absolutely think that a well-placed emotional fig leaf is unconditionally required at times. And under no circumstances would I ever suggest that you let it all hang out. You know, it's just like saying, "Well, I feel so much better when I throw up." Yeah, but it's kind of hard on the people around you, you know. One time, Polly and I decided that we wanted to be on the fast track to happy destiny rather than trudge. And so we went to a therapist. We wanted to be more intimate with each other. And we wanted to communicate better. And the therapist and Polly convinced me they wanted to know what I really thought about something. And I didn't want to tell them. And they said, "This is really important. It's how you learn to be intimate and trusting. You share your innermost thoughts." And they conned me into doing that. And I have lived to regret it to this very instant. I fully expect to go to my grave regretting this. Because their response was, "Oh shit, we didn't know you felt that way. We thought you were going to feel this way." And you know what? And it hurt, you know, while that is kind of funny, it hurt Polly a lot. And she's not ever going to be able to forget that. I have forgotten it. It was just a temporary thing. It was a passing thing. It was the way I felt at that moment. You know, when somebody says, "How do you feel?" Well, what time of day? What day? What month? What year? You know, it varies from time to time. And that was one of those things. But it hurt her. And she's never going to forget it. She can forgive it. She can't forget it. See, she'll also always remember that. Have some secrets. You know, ask your heart what to hold back and what not to hold back. You know, your heart knows the answer to questions like that. If you feel wormy about holding something back, you really need to think about it. Anyway, so, if you don't like the answers to any of these questions, you've got to ask yourself next, what can I do to change the way I feel? And what actions can I take to change the way I feel? That's tradition one.
Hi, everybody. My name is Polly, and I'm an alcoholic. And I will tell you, I don't know if you can realize how much restraint it's taken me to sit there and be quiet all that time. Tradition two, for our group purpose, there is but one ultimate authority, a loving God as he may express himself in our group conscience. We are each trusted servants. No one governs. Dave says down here, because Dave wrote this material, and I'd like to say when we gave this workshop, I had done a little workshop in the past called Emotional Sobriety. So what we did at that workshop is Dave did the traditions and I did Emotional Sobriety. So by and large, all this material was written from Dave's viewpoint. So what I do is I just sort of fill in. And Dave has here, and this is something that's just so familiar to him, and he says, God is the boss, although I can frequently be heard to mutter, I'm the boss, applesauce. And he does that, and it's just his kind of way of kidding when I'm pushing my point. But what has happened for us in this tradition is, I think, again, Dave talked about us bringing a lot of baggage. And I'm kind of one of these people, and I'm sure that probably none of you are like this, but I have a lot of control issues. And I sort of like things my way, and I like to make decisions myself. And sometimes it's really hard for me to incorporate those decisions with Dave. When we first got married, the baggage that I brought with me was that I am an only child, so I had nobody else to communicate things I did with. And the second thing was, is I was a military wife. So what that also meant was, is that I was by and large a single parent. So my husband was gone most of the time. He didn't care about how the bills got paid. He didn't care about how the children were raised. He just cared that it was done. So I had always been sort of like independent, doing my own thing. But the really crazy thing about the whole thing was, is I always wanted to be taken care of. So I was constantly in this, you know, in this conflict, as I think so many of us are as alcoholics. It's like, I want to be one thing, but I don't want the consequences of it. So when I came into this relationship with Dave, it was like, somebody would say, well, do you want to go out to dinner? Yes. And then I would go tell Dave, we're going out to dinner with such and such. And Dave would say, well, I really wish you would have consulted me about that, because I'm going to do, you know, I've already made plans to do such and such. So here we were. He made his plans and I made my plans. Or what I would do is I would say things like, I agree to do such and such. And Dave would say, well, geez, I wish you would have talked to me about that, because I really don't care to do that. It's not something that I enjoy doing. And it was just constantly this. I loved what June said today, because I am so much like her. I have so much Al-Anonism. And when she would talk about how she would tell the kids how they were to act, how they were to behave, I used to do that with Dave, with my boys. Now, this is what you're supposed to say. This is how you're supposed to act. And why can't you do such and such? And he would say to me things like, Holly, those are grown men. And see, my head saw them as little boys. And I felt like he should compromise himself to do what I thought he ought to do so my boys would like him, would like him. And finally he got in my face one day and he said, you know, you just may have to accept that your boys and I will never get along. And it wasn't until he got in my face and said something like that I realized that the problem that was going on between my sons and Dave was me. I was so busy trying to govern and make these relationships work, and I was so busy making those boys an extension of me that I couldn't see that Dave and I had a relationship, and Dave and Russ and James had a relationship, and I and Russ and James had a relationship. I didn't know anything about boundaries. All I knew was that it was just this big mesh posh, and for everybody was supposed to get along. There was no reality to it. And I was in there, I listened to June this morning, and I totally identified with Tradition 2. Because there I was exhausted trying to govern this whole thing, and trying to make everybody happy, and trying to make this work. And what it was so hard for me to just let go and let God and let there be an ultimate authority and it not be me. I try really hard today. And sometimes, I don't know how you are with your mate, but sometimes it's really hard to try to just sit for a minute and think about how God would treat Dave in this situation. Because God and I are not feeling about Dave the same way. It's really funny because we were at lunch today, and it's always amazing to me that we're going to get up at 3 o'clock and do a workshop, and at 1 o'clock, I'm taking Dave's inventory in front of Vicki. So, you know, there's a lot of things that continue to be learned, and I'm always grateful that there is an ultimate authority, and it's not me. Another tool that we recommend is also about as tasty as a spoonful of castor oil, but after a few times, it gets a little easier. We call it the 8 miracle words for problem solving. I'm sorry. I was wrong. Please forgive me. And I want you to know that there are times when I have to say that to Dave, and I want to just die. And one of the things that I highly encourage you to do is to get a sponsor or someone in your life who has a successful relationship that can help you in these situations. And that's what Dave and I have done. Dave's sponsor, we just went about 6 or 8 months ago to his 50th wedding anniversary. And he got married all over again to his wife. And I want what they have. And Frank has 50 years of marriage and 31 years of sobriety, and he's got what I want. My AA sponsor has 38 years of sobriety, and Red just died about 8 months ago. But they had been married for 32 years. I want what they have. Peggy and Dick, who have done a lot of help with us with these traditions, have been sober 30 years and married somewhere in the 20s. I'm not exactly sure. But they have what I want. So I highly encourage you. When somebody comes to me and they have a problem of which I have no experience, what I try to do is separate myself from my ego and send them to someone who has that experience. Because the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous tells me that what I'm here and what I am an expert on is only my experience, strength, and hope. And what I learned in early sobriety, if I want to have a successful relationship, I don't go to someone who's been a bachelor for 50 years. I go to someone who's having a relationship. And those are some of the things that I feel like that are very important for me. When this tradition is practiced, a state of humility exists because the authority is a higher power. And least Dave and I ever forget that God is in charge, I truly believe that our relationship is in trouble. And the little checklist is, do I insist on being the leader? Do I feel that it is my place to govern? Do we strive for equality. And I used to think equality was doing what I wanted to do. Do I try to speak for Dave without consulting him? Now, I want you to know Dave is really good about that to me. But I am really, and I still have a lot of trouble with that today. And I think a lot of it is I am one of these people that it just gets a little over-enthusiastic. And I will volunteer Dave for things. I even volunteer his things for things. Dave is one of these people that has a lot of toys. And he has a lot of backpacks. And there are people who like to go backpacking and they don't have equipment. And I say, oh, don't worry about it. Just call Dave. He'll let you have one of his backpacks. And, you know, it's really funny, but I don't know if you can believe this, but Dave really doesn't like for me to do that. And I'm forever doing that, and I still have a bad character defect about that. So what has happened is that I have had to learn the hard way, and I have to call that person back up and say, you know, I'm really sorry that I volunteered Dave's equipment, but I did it without consulting him, and I don't really know how he feels about that. And, you know, it's kind of one of those things about making amends. If you make amends enough time, you'll just stop doing it. And it's really better because I really don't like the embarrassment of having to call back and tell people I shouldn't have done that. Do I criticize Dave? I did it at 1 o'clock today. Yes, I do. I don't feel good about it, though, when I do. And I try not to, because that's not a loving act. Or do I trust him? And sometimes those don't work together, because I do. I trust Dave with all my heart. But I still do sometimes have to tell him how to do it. I just have to. Am I absolutely trustworthy? And Dave says, try this little prayer. God, treat me tomorrow the way I treat Dave today. Help me not to do anything today that I can't tell Dave about tonight. And, you know, just my thinking sometime, I would not want Dave, when you do this little, God, treat me tomorrow the way I treat Dave today, I would like for Dave not to even think sometimes the way I think. So there you go. Is my ego so strong that I must have credit for more than I do? Am I so insecure that I must always have praise for my actions and ideas? And I can assure you that I still have a lot of problems with that. I do things a lot of times, and I'm 100 times better than I used to be. But I used to do things just so that you would tell me what a nice person I am. And today that's better. Do I do my share? Oh, do I do my share? And I do it with such a silent rage so that you can see how much I'm doing and how little you're doing. That one's still... You know, they will say, well, why didn't you just ask me? Can't you just see that it needs to be done? Why should I have to ask you? I can take it to a fine art. And is that my opinion or my partner's? I've been known to quote Dave to say things and he didn't say them. Does the thought of God being in charge of our relationship cause me any discomfort, or do I like and rely on the idea? Tradition 3.
Okay, the third tradition says the only requirement for membership is a desire to stop drinking for this workshop. It's a desire to be in the relationship and a willingness to put out whatever it takes. You know, there are words we use like strive, you know, and so forth. Words like that suggest to me that you're willing to do some work. You know, strive is a word that suggests that you're willing to really put forth some effort. So anyway, as far as a desire to be in a relationship, you know, there's a lot of reasons why people stay in a relationship other than just a desire to be in it. You know, there are problems with financial insecurity sometimes, and people feel like they have to stay in a relationship because they don't know what they'll do financially if something happens to the relationship. Sometimes there's a need for some kind of emotional security just by having a member of the opposite sex around. You know, I've seen this many times in new people. You know, they have to have a person of the opposite sex in their life. You know, sometimes it's young women who absolutely have to have a man, and I didn't drink today, but I spent almost all day trying to figure out who my next boyfriend's gonna be. So sometimes just having a mate of any kind is, you know. Sometimes we stay in relationships because we feel trapped. You know, there are children to raise and other things, and you just feel trapped, and you have to stay in it for that reason. And these are tough problems to deal with, you know. And there are problems like these are the breeding ground for anger and for resentment. And it's very, very difficult to make a relationship work if you don't have a desire to be in it. If you don't really want to be in it, but you feel like you're trapped in it and you have to stay in it, it's almost impossible to make it work. You know, and there's some days when Polly and I are both just intolerable and uncompromising, and the desire to be in that relationship in our marriage is all there is. That's all there is a desire. You know, we're just having a bad hair day. And, you know, when either one of us is being a jackass, then the other one has got to try to be accepting and kind and tolerant and understanding and loving and most of all, silent. You know? Keep your mouth shut. Because tomorrow the roles are going to be reversed and you're going to be the jackass. And you're going to want your mate to be kind and tolerant and loving and silent, you know. So, believe me, you will want that when it's your turn to be the jackass. Now, the first 2 years that Polly and I were married, we were just absolutely, totally obsessed with each other. To the exclusion of everything else. Our whole life was moonlight and roses and romance, and we lived an idyllic existence. We had a place in Michigan that was like it was a condo that was built out in the woods, and it was had a big loft, and it was just absolutely wonderful. And we were totally obsessed with each other. We were totally in love, and it has grown since then. You know, we are still totally in love, but that obsession, you know, has eased a lot. And now our marriage has become so much more, you know, and the desire to be in this relationship has grown immeasurably. You know, because now Polly is not only the lady that I love romantically, but she's also my friend and my confidant. And she's patient with me, and she's tolerant. She has a lot of regard for my feelings. And I never thought I would have anybody that would ever treat me like that. I was convinced that nobody would ever treat me like that. I was convinced that I was not worthy to be treated like that. And you know what I would do for her? Anything. Just about anything. My desire to be in this relationship has grown immeasurably. You know, we have a lot of enthusiasm for our relationship, but sometimes we have more than others. You know, sometimes there are days when, you know, when we just, there are always those days when you just become lazy about doing the important things in your life. You know, there are days when you become lazy about your program and you just don't want to do it. And there are days when you're going to be lazy about your relationship. But, you know, this thing is usually temporary and it passes. You know, but a fundamental aspect of our relationship is that we truly and deeply love each other. And when we're being a jackass, you know, we have to remember it's just one of those days when if we could do better, we would. We just can't. So for tradition three, you know, do my actions say, the checklist is, do my actions say that I have a desire to be in this relationship? Not do I mouth those words, but do my actions, what I do,
that tell Polly, I have a real strong desire to be in this marriage with you? You know, I talked earlier about love is not a feeling. Love is action. Do I set myself up as a judge of my partner's intentions or sincerity, and do I judge my partner in anything? I think the answer is occasionally yes. I think it's inevitable. I think it is part of the human condition that from time to time you cannot escape being judgmental about other people, and that includes your mate. You just can't. But you can become aware of it, and you can become aware of the fact, if you really give it some thought, that judging another person is more harmful to you than it is the other person. It has almost no effect on the other person. It has almost no effect on you when I judge you, but it makes me feel crappy. It makes me feel very negative. So I pay the price for being judgmental, not you, not the person I judge. Do I approach my marriage unselfishly, or do I depend on Polly's language, or looks, or race, or education, or appearance, or job, or anything along that line for part of my own self-esteem? How does Polly have to dress, or act, or talk to accommodate my ego, or my self-esteem? And, you know, if you got any requirements along that line, you're a sitting duck for a heartache. Am I committed to, and do I encourage her spiritual and professional and individual growth and freedom? Do I really say to her with honesty and with all of my heartfelt honesty, Polly, go be the very best Polly you can be, whatever that means to you, wherever that takes you and whatever that means to you. Can I do that and be unafraid about saying that? And the answer is not at first. You know, that was a kind of a scary thought when we were first new, because what if it takes her somewhere else? You know, I mean, the thought of that was, that'll make your sphincter oscillate, but I have, I have gotten to the point where I can say that and mean it, you know, and it's a great feeling of freedom that I have because I can say that. Polly, just go be the very best Polly you can be, you know, and anything I can do to help you do that, I'll be glad to do it. You gave me the courage to be able to do that. Am I able to share my feelings with my partner, and can I listen to my partner's feelings with an open mind? Well, it's hard for me to share my feelings. It really is. I suspect that you know, there's not a lot of men in here who really find it easy to share their feelings. It's a common complaint. You know, something you find around the house. And the last point here is, am I reluctant or hesitant to work on my part of the relationship? You know, to work on me and not try to change her. That's tradition three.
Tradition four. Each group should be autonomous, except in matters affecting other groups or AA as a whole. Each partner should be autonomous except in matters affecting the other partner, other members, children, or parents, or the relationship as a whole. Another way to say this is that we must have the ability to become unselfish. Our thinking must become, how does this affect us, rather than how does this affect me? One of the things that I think that probably with Dave's and my relationship is that we have come, and I expect that we will go a lot further, and this is probably where we shine the best. And that is thanks to the program of Alcoholics Anonymous and what you've taught us, Dave and I have been able to say to each other, you go be the very best Dave you can be, and I'll go be the very best Polly I can be. And it all sort of kind of started in that Dave and I love each other so much, but Dave and I are totally different in the things that we're interested in. Now, when Dave and I go to bed at night, we both read before we go to bed, but the reading material is entirely different. Dave is reading Omni magazine or some mind-blowing intellectual bullshit, as far as I'm concerned. Just observing. And I'm reading some trashy murder mystery. So this is like this is about where our intellect is. Dave is very, very bright, and for a long time I had a lot of intimidation with that, because I'm a high school graduate and Dave is a member of Mensa. That's a big space. And so I had a lot of problems with communicating intellectually. And thanks to Dave's support and the things that he just says, Polly, you know things about life that just come. And I don't know those things. And he's really helped me to feel good about myself. And I believe that I support him in feeling good about himself. And the relationship grows even though we're miles apart. Now there's the today and the things that we like today. Now I'm one of these people that, not that Dave works any less AA program than I do, because he doesn't. He just does it differently. Dave is kind of one of these quiet men and Alcoholics Anonymous who goes to meetings, sets up chairs, makes coffee, but there's not a lot of hoopla. And I'm one of these people that's on every committee, sponsoring a lot of people, out doing a lot of things, and just like rah, 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 rah all the time. So what happens as a result of that is that I'm involved a lot in what goes on in Alcoholics Anonymous, and I've had the opportunity to travel a lot. Well, Dave may or may not come with me when I go somewhere to a convention out of town. But he gives me, you know, a marvelous send-off, and as Dave tells him, he said, it tells me to tell you, and sometimes I can and sometimes I can't, depending on how I feel at that time, because a lot of times I'm just too embarrassed to, but Dave's always telling him, honey, you go tell him that I send my very best. I'm sending them you. And it's like, you know, and I know that that's how he feels about me, because he loves me so much. But the way I love Dave so much is Dave has a passion. And Dave is in touch with his God when he's up on top of a mountain walking around. And he likes to throw a 40-pound pack on his back, and he likes to go walk around on top of mountains. And he likes to throw ropes up there, and they like to go up them and come down them and all that kind of stuff. And I will assure you that I have no interest in that. First of all, you can't take baths, and that mountain climbing causes you to break your fingernails and skin your knees. And that's just not my thing. But I'm so grateful that he loves to do that. And I feel like that we have been able to do that in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous. But the thing that we had to accept first before we could get to this place was to trust each other. And I'm going to share a little story with you, because I believe this is how far we've come. But this lady was who worked with me, and she says, I love to go backpacking and I love to go camping. And she says, and not very many women like to do that, but I hate to go with guys, because every time I go with a guy, he wants to have sex with me. And I said, well, Linda, why don't you give my husband a call? I said, he'd love to go backpacking with you, and I'll assure you he's not going to be interested in having sex with you. So I don't know if she liked that or she didn't like that, for me to say that to her. But what happened was that they ended up going camping and backpacking a lot. So, and sometimes it was just him and her. But thanks to the program of Alcoholics Anonymous and a loving God and learning about the autonomy of a relationship and knowing with all my heart that Dave would not do anything to harm this relationship, he went on those camping trips knowing that I wasn't home stewing about it, and I was free to let him go without any feelings of jealousy are feeling less than. And I think that that's the miracle of the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. And that is truly the fourth tradition. And I'd like to give you some. And I also think that the fourth tradition is a lot like the fourth step. And I think a lot of times we have to inventory our relationship, and we have to look at, why is it that I don't want my partner to do something? Is it because of how it's going to affect me, or do I feel intimidated or less than? And I had to watch. I mean, I did things like when Dave first started this backpacking stuff, it was like I couldn't be just direct. And I'd start things like, geez, that equipment really costs a lot of money. And the implication in my voice was, you spend more money on your toys than I spend on mine. And I had to take an inventory of how I do things and how I say things. Because what I was doing is, I want you to be supportive of all the shopping and the clothes I buy, but, you know, you going and buying all that equipment sort of like, you know, it interferes with the money I'm going to have over here. So I had to take a look at how selfish and self-centered I was and not wanting him to have his toys. So I also think that Tradition 4 has a way of looking at my behavior and how I behave in this relationship like a step 4, which is, what is my part in it, and how do I behave, and what are my actions? Checklist for Tradition 4. Do I feel like there are only certain ways to do things? I think I explained that. I had those ideas. Thank God they are changing, and I really do. I feel like probably this is the tradition Dave and I do the best. And are they my ways, and do I insist on things being done in those ways? And I feel pretty confident today in saying that I feel very, very good about allowing Dave to go be the best Dave he can be. And I can tell you, when I was able to release that, there is a freedom in that. I can't, you know, Wednesday night, I went out to dinner with a woman that I sponsor, and Dave and I have a regular Wednesday night meeting. And Dave didn't show up at the meeting Wednesday night. And somewhere between the time I left and he was supposed to come, he just decided he wasn't going to that meeting. And about five people asked me, where's Dave? And you know what I took great pleasure in? I don't know. It's not my night to watch him. And it was like, I didn't have to know why he wasn't there. It wasn't any of my business why he wasn't there. And I just, and it really didn't concern me one way or another. And I'm so grateful that I've got to that place that I'm not running out to a payphone saying, where are you? But I can assure you that's the way it used to be. Do I always think about how or if my decisions will affect my partner? And that's one of the things that I think there's a big word in relationships that we really need to take a look at, and that word is courtesy. To just, you know, Dave and I are very busy, as I know people are in the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. If you're in the middle of Alcoholics Anonymous, you're busy. And one of the things we do is we leave a lot of notes. I'm going to be here. I'm going to be there. It's just courteous to let your partner know what you're doing and where you are. And I think that's just, I mean, just so you don't worry. And I think there's just courtesy to allow people to know that. Am I willing to go to any lengths to protect the integrity of the relationship? And I can say that honestly, yes. This is the very best thing, second only to my sobriety, that I have, is this relationship. And I didn't know it was possible to love someone as much as I love Dave, or to enjoy a relationship as much as we have enjoyed each other. And I would not do anything to hurt this relationship. Do I carefully avoid injuring Dave emotionally, physically, and spiritually? And I'm just going to say, most of the time. How do I deal with my partner's anger regarding something I've done through my autonomy? One of the things that Dave did it to me first, I had a lot of problems with jealousy. In early sobriety, and I don't know if some of the women are out here, and maybe some of the men too, but I sponsor some pretty gorgeous women. And most of them are younger than me, and most of them are thinner than me. And they love Dave. And I was really jealous about that. And I started ragging on Dave one day about one of these women that I sponsor. And, and he was going off helping her buy a car and all this kind of stuff, and I was ragging on him, and he looked at me and he says, "Polly, I love you with all my heart, but I can assure you I am not changing my relationship with Karen. And if that bothers you, I am truly sorry." And I had to take a look at that. And I'm really grateful that Dave was not willing to compromise his relationships with outside people just to accommodate my insecurities. And I've been really grateful for that ever since, because you see, now a lot of years have gone by, and I have male friends in the program, and I've been known to go have lunch with a male friend in the program, and maybe dinner before a meeting, or maybe that person will drive me to a meeting. And Dave never, ever says a word. And I'm really grateful today that we've been able to have autonomy in our relationship, that makes sure how it affects the relationship, and that we behave in a manner that would not at all compromise the integrity of our relationship. Do I try to subdue him with still greater anger, or do I try to push him away in any way? Now, we've already talked about my pouting, so I will use a lot of what I just call, it's emotional manipulation. The big book of Alcoholics Anonymous talks about manipulation through kindness. I'm so angry at Dave, and I'm just treating him so nicely that I am just firing with rage. And it's so dishonest. Thank God I have been able to stop myself and say, you know, I'm just so angry at, you know, the situation or what's going on. And Dave is really good to say, well, you just want to sit down and talk about it? And what happens is that neither one of us are very good about these kind of confrontations, but thank God it's getting better. Tradition 5.
Okay, tradition 5 has to do with our primary purpose, and our primary purpose for Polly and me and our relationship is to express the theme of love and loyalty and family and unity in all that we do, and to share this knowledge freely with other people. So, conducting our relationship within Alcoholics Anonymous in many cases within AA and Al-Anon is a requirement. This relationship, we require that we conduct it within a recovery program, because we don't think there's a chance for it to work any other way. You know, we didn't know how to treat people. We didn't know how to conduct relationships. When we got here, you taught us everything we know. And you see, we find out that if we don't stay with you, the longer we're away from you, the more we lose. We have a slow leak somewhere, and this all leaks out. And you look up one day, it's not there anymore. So, you know, being in the program of Alcoholics Anonymous is a requirement for our relationship, because that's the only way we can deal with our selfishness and self-willed behavior. We realize that our troubles are of our own making, and whenever there's a disagreement between us, you know, somebody said this earlier that was talking, you know, I have come to say, you know, Polly could be the one that's right. We don't know who's right. And I have to say to myself, it could be Polly. So Tradition 5 asks us to give comfort and encouragement and understanding to our partner. You know, another thing about our primary purpose is that we don't require absolute fixed equality in everything. You know, some people think a marriage is a 50-50 deal. Well, that's nice theoretically or in an ideal world, you know, but that's just not the real world. It hasn't been for us, at least. You know, things are seldom equal. Sometimes the biggest share of the load I can carry is about 20%. You know, that's it. And I'm putting out 100% of everything I got just to carry that 20%. And sometimes it's reversed. You know, sometimes Polly can't put out any more than that. But if you just realize that as long as everybody is doing the best they can, you can let go of those ideas like 50%. Our checklist for Tradition 5 is do we have a primary purpose and do we know what it is? Another thing is, do I resort to emotional blackmail? Do I ever start sentences with the phrase, if you loved me, you would fill in the blank. No. If you cared about me, you would or would not. Do I demand precise equality? And if so, do I monitor my share as closely as I monitor Polly's? Or am I just in search of a verbal bludgeon to beat her over the head with? Do I really understand that my troubles are of my own making? Do I really understand that I have a part in everything? And do I really concede to my innermost self that whenever I am upset, no matter what the cause, there is something wrong with me? I hated that when I first got here. Do we express God's love in our relationship, and do we share that love with other people? You know, how important is liking myself to my relationship? You know, do I have or do I need the self-esteem or self-respect? You know, nobody wants to have a partner who feels badly about themselves. You know, nobody wants a partner that sits around and moans about, you know, bad-mouths himself all the time. Oh, well, it's never going to happen to me. You know, nobody will ever love me. I mean, you get confident and all. And so I think it's important that you know, if you don't have any self-esteem or self-respect, get some. You need it. And the book is full of ways to do that. You know, Polly mentioned this also earlier. Can I see my partner through God's eyes, or can I hear my partner through God's ears? And sometimes yes, sometimes no. Mostly yes. Because I know Polly by now, and I know what makes her tick. And I know as much as I'm probably ever going to know. But, I know what she does when she doesn't think anybody's watching. So it's easier that way when you know someone that well to know what they think. Six.
An AA group ought never endorse, finance, or lend the AA name to any related facility or outside enterprise, lest problems of money, property, and prestige divert us from our primary purpose. I think one of the problems that can destroy a relationship more than anything else is the problem of money. And what Dave and I have tried to do is to use our money and to talk about our money and to share our money. Because this particular area is a place that I have seen more relationships destroyed. And it's the thing like, I make more money than you, or you spend more money than me. And I really am so grateful that we have found a way to communicate in this area. Because when Dave was laid off from his job, I am grateful that we had already walked through the money situation. And what happened was, is when we were first married, there was just a lot of things that were a problem. He had alimony, and I had brought in a lot of financial baggage. And because we were forced to, we had to get a lot of help from some wonderful people in the program of Alcoholics Anonymous to begin to get financial things worked out. And I just believe that money is, you know, there's another book that says money is the root of all evil, and I think that it is one of the things that can destroy a marriage. So I highly encourage you to get communicative in the area of money, because we did, and I'm really grateful for this. Another thing in this tradition, and I want to read what Dave has written here because I think it's really important. A partner should be supportive spiritually, emotionally, and physically to the relationship. But a mature partner doesn't do for the other what they can do for themselves. And I think June said that last night. And, you know, there would have been, if there was any way I could have taken Dave's pain from him when he was without a job, I would have done that. But you see, this was the first time that had happened to Dave in our relationship. But when Dave and I first got married, we moved quite a few times. And every time we moved, I had to find a new job. And Dave was very supportive to me. And he never did things like, well, what's taking you so long to find a job? And look at these bills. And we've got, you know, problems. And, you know, yakety, yakety, yak. And when the situation was reversed, and what it always seems like to me is if I ever give out anything, it's that same old thing we hear in AA, what goes around comes around, I always get it back. And so Dave was very kind to me, and what had happened to him, I could feel the compassion that he had felt for me. Because you see, I knew how badly he felt about it taking so long to find a job, and how hard it is on your self-worth when you can't find a job. And I was so grateful that he had loved me so tenderly because I was able to give that back to him. And for that, I'm really grateful. Because what happens is like what June was talking about. I am a person who can literally love you to death. And most of the time, what I have to do is just back off and let a person fall if that's what they need to do. And that's very hard, and it's especially very hard in the area of our children. And what I have learned for me is sometimes my ego needs to be needed so bad that it's really hard for me to just let Dave do and go about how he needs to do that. He is much better about that than I am. But sometimes I just have this need to fix something. If, you know, especially in the area of money, and then you start into this money, property, and prestige, and that big word prestige gets in the way. Because you see, if I'm helping you and if I'm doing things for you, somehow my ego just gets massaged and I am so needed. And what happens is that I'm getting a false ego and I'm crippling you. And that has been a really tough one. So thank God for Al-Anon when they gave us live and let live and for God's sakes learn to detach. So that I am really grateful for. One of the things that Dave has down here that I think is really important is so many times we feel like we are attachments of each other and that we have, that he's a part of me. But we're each individual, and together we have a relationship. And when Dave and I were going to get married, my first AA sponsor, he's dead today, but Frank was a beautiful man, and Dave and I were getting ready to get married, and he says, Polly, you take this relationship and you think of it as two oak trees. And he says, you know, those two oak trees, if you plant them firmly, and he says, and that's the program of Alcoholics Anonymous, you plant yourself firmly in the program of Alcoholics Anonymous, and you and Dave will grow strong and your trunk will be straight. And he says, and then one day you're going to look up and you can't tell where one begins and the other one ends, because the whole top of the tree has grown together. He says, but if either of you begin to lean on each other in this relationship or lean on each other's program, any time one starts leaning on the other, both of you will fall over. And I'm really grateful for that, because today that's how we have lived our marriage. And both of us have been firmly planted in the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. And it seems the longer that we're married, the more alike we become. And I'd like to just kind of quote a little thing from the prophet, Gabon's prophet. Love one another, but make not a bond of love. Let it rather be a moving sea between the shores of your souls. Fill each other's cup, but drink not from one cup. Give one another of your bread, but eat not from the same loaf. Sing and dance together and be joyous, but let each one of you be alone. Even as the strings of the lute are alone, though they quiver with the same music. Give your hearts, but not into each other's keeping, for only the hand of life can contain your hearts, and stand together, yet not too near together. For the pillars of the temple stand apart, and the oak tree and the cypress grow not in each other's shadow. The checklist. Do I encourage and support my partner? You bet. What is motivating me when I try to be all things to my partner? Ego. That old thing of needing to be needed because my ego is so insecure. How can I hear God's voice when I'm arguing? And Dave always says, you know, just start an argument and watch your partner's mind slam shut. Because when you're attacking me, I cannot hear you and I cannot hear God. And when I'm attacking you, the same goes. I can't hear God and I can't hear you. Do I allow my partner the dignity to fail? It's tough, but I try. Do I pretend to agree with my partner just to keep things going? And that's what I used to do. I was one of these people that just placated Dave. I would just agree with him, and then I would get rageful and resentful. And today, I try the very best I can to practice honesty in the relationship. Do I take responsibility for my own spiritual and emotional and physical needs? I think it's very important for me to be self-supporting through my own contribution, and I think it's very important to me for me to practice a step 10 in this relationship and at all times know my part in it. Am I in this relationship just to feel needed or loved? I am in this relationship because I love, not because I need to be loved. Tradition 7.
7 says that every group ought to be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions. To me, this means that I have to be responsible for myself. And if I can't understand or accept that notion, then I'm clearly saying that my troubles are caused by other people or places or things. And if that's so, then, I talked about this yesterday. If my troubles are your fault, then before I can get any better, I got to get you to change. And that is a dead end, and it is futile to think that you will ever find anything in being a victim other than just a grinding, oppressive sense of defeat. That's the only thing you'll ever get out of being a victim. There's also the issue of control here. You know, I have to be careful not to do anything that are going to limit or curtail the options of Polly so that I don't risk being hurt or frightened. You know, I can't tell her you can't do this because it scares me if you do that, you know, or I become frightened if you do that. You must behave so that I don't worry or become afraid or become embarrassed. We have to avoid that because all it does is cause resentment. So we just got through talking about how much how important it is for both members of a relationship to be independent spiritually and emotionally, and being self-supporting is impossible if you let one of the other partners become the higher power, and we've gone into that pretty thoroughly up to now. So the checklist for Tradition 7 is. Do I attempt to assume control of my partner and our relationship? Do my needs for comfort or a feeling of safety limit my partner's options? Do I accept responsibility for myself, and can I admit to my innermost self that my problems are of my own making? Do I try to manage and control things through the purse strings? Do I think that because something's good for me personally that it's also good for Polly? Do I deceive myself by thinking how unselfish and giving I am when in reality I'm only giving what I want to and I'm giving that on my own terms? I also talked about that last night. You know, my ex-wife said to me, you don't ever give anything. And I got angry and reminded her of all the things that I gave. And can I point to at least one thing right now that determines the degree of healthy independence that I have? Can I point to something? And the answer is yes, I can.
Hey. We're getting running out. Alcoholics Anonymous should remain forever non-professional, but our service centers may employ special workers. Our individual contributions to the relationship should be free and from the heart. As it says in the 12 and 12, freely you have received, freely give. And Dave and I look at this relation, this tradition as should remain forever non-professional. As we say, I'm not a professional chef, and Dave's not a professional plumber, and I'm not a professional housekeeper. And if you're hungry, cook. If you don't like the way the house looks, clean. And that's kind of where we're at with that tradition. So nobody in our house is in charge, and as we both say, and nobody wants to be. So it's what we try to do is just if it needs being, if it needs doing, do it. And if it's in front of you, you be the one to do it. So Dave and I don't have any traditional things. We're both employed, and our home doesn't have, a female or a male gender there. Whatever needs doing is we do it, regardless of who's. It's sort of, traditionally should be. And I'm really grateful for that. And so we don't have any professionals in our home. And for that we are grateful. We have found that when we are individually living by the principles of the 12 steps and collectively by the principles of the 12 traditions and maintaining a good relationship with God, a sense of serenity and peace with each other helps to diminish our self-centeredness, Being in touch with all these things allows us to be free. And if our spirits are to soar, they must be free. So we're out of that rigid, that's your job and that's my job kind of stuff. We both wash or wash, I think they say. I'm a Southerner, we wash. So we both iron, we both cook, we both wash dishes, all the good stuff. Do these traditions accurately describe my behavior? Yes. If not, what needs to be changing? And that's what I think we do, is we constantly need to be using the 10th step on our relationship. Do I try to sound like an expert on all things? It's getting better. If so, why do I need to do that? And any time I need to do that, it's because of my own insecurity. And I have to remember that any time I start trying to boss Dave around, that's my barometer that I'm insecure. Do I believe that one of the other partners should be in charge based on their gender? And that's what we have finally got a gender-free household as far as chores go, and I'm really grateful for that. Do I make an effort to understand my partner's opinions and views? Yes, I do. Do I really listen to him and show respect for those opinions and views? Sometimes. Does my identity and feelings of self-worth depend upon my relationship with Dave? And I can truly say that today, I would be very sad if anything happened to Dave. But I know because of this program and a loving God that I would be okay. And that was not always true in my life. There was a time when I really believed that I could not survive if I did not have a man in my life. And I'm really grateful that that part of me has healed. Who or what was my role model for a healthy relationship? Before coming to the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous, absolutely nothing. My parents were married, but that was it. I mean, as far as they did not have a relationship I wanted. Can I give for fun and for free, requiring nothing in return? And yes, I can do that today. And where I learned to do that was in sponsorship in the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. That's where I began to learn that. Do I charge my mate a fee for being in the relationship with me? And I don't have any hooks on the relationship anymore. I'll do this for you if you do this for me. Do I take hostages in my relationship? And today, I don't have to have a hostage. I don't have to hold Dave hostage, and for that I'm grateful. Do I feel like my mate belongs to me? No. I feel like my mate is there because he wants to be there. And that's a very, very freeing feeling. Do I really understand that I will reap what I sow, and what goes around comes around? Yes, I do.
AA as such ought never be organized, but we may create service boards or committees directly responsible to those they serve. trying to organize and govern a bunch of drunks is just, you know, even two drunks, it's just out of the question. No, almost without exception, you know, the failure to control an alcoholic by force or intimidation has been complete. You know, we have been threatened with everything. Doctors threaten us with death. You know, you're going to die if you don't quit drinking. You're going to get fired if you don't quit drinking. I'm leaving you if you don't quit drinking. And failure to control an alcoholic has just been almost complete. And so it's not strange that we find the only real authority is that of a loving God, as he may express himself. It's not personal authority. So our defiant individualism, I think, is the reason we failed in life. With this in mind, it follows to me that a relationship ought never be organized. It needs to be spontaneous and unpretentious and unrehearsed, and it needs to be candid. And it's just meant to avoid or preempt the unexpected, usually because we're afraid of the unknown. So what this tradition is to us is an exhortation to be fun, to have fun rather, to lighten up, to be playful with each other, and to just enjoy the thing. You know, don't take yourself or anything else in life so seriously. You know, we've had some tough times in our life, but so have you, and we've all lived through them. And have some laughs. You know, enjoy your sense of humor. If you don't have one, get one. And play with it, you know. If you want to hear God laugh, share your plans with him. he's got a sense of humor. So, just be careful when it comes to organization. Organization leads to attempts to control, and that's going to kill any kind of happy relationship. So have fun with it. You know, relationships aren't built on Robert's Rules of Orders. They're just not going to work. So our checklist is, Do I exercise patience and humility, and do I assume responsibility, or do I try to take on authority? Have I learned how and when to step aside gracefully when I begin to overstep my bounds? You know, am I a peace at any price person? And doesn't this get to be expensive at times? And can I just enjoy Polly? Can I just laugh and just, you know, and we're running out of time, so I don't have time to go into this, and I won't, but you know, we have a couple of little dogs, Winston and Dusty Rose, and we argue all the time over which one they love the best, me or Polly. And we monitor their behavior to see, because we check whose side of the bed they sleep on at night. So, have fun. Tradition 10.
Alcoholics Anonymous has no opinion on outside issues, hence the AA name ought never be drawn into public controversy. Within the context of relationships, I believe this means that we are careful about our opinions and rely on a live and let live attitude. We do not drag our relationship into public controversy. In fact, we avoid heated controversy completely. It is usually fired by some form of fear and carries with it power-driven anger, resentment, and emotional damage. Next time you get into a heated argument with your mate, and this is what we talked about before, listen how fast his mind slams shut. And one of the things I think is real important is that when I carry out my opinion, when I go out of the confines of that relationship and I have an opinion, that's my opinion. That's not our opinion. And, because see, a lot of times it's my house, but it's our thinking. And I have to remember it's our house and it's my thinking. Because I'm the one that's carrying this attitude. And that I don't take this relationship and start airing it out at AA meetings and just around people and telling all this bad stuff. Now when I've got issues, I will assure you, I take those to my AA sponsor, or I might take that to someone I sponsor and talk about my feelings and get some perspective on how I'm behaving and how I'm acting. Because most of the time, in fact, the book says all of the time, in step 10, it says it is a spiritual axiom. When anything disturbs me, whatever the reason, it's me. So if I've got a problem, more than likely, it's my perception of what's going on in this relationship more than what it is, and then what Dave is doing. Love is an action, not a feeling. If you love someone, you treat them like you love them. If you want to know whether or not you're loved, ask your heart. And if that icky feeling is inside of me, more than likely, I need to sit down and talk with Dave, and probably I owe him an amends. That's usually my experience. If I've got an icky feeling going on, I owe Dave an amends. Checklist. Do I give the impression that we have an opinion and I'm its keeper? Doing better. Am I careful to keep confidences given to me by my partner? And I think that's really important, that when Dave tells me something in confidence because he trusts me, that I keep it there. And I think that's just like listening to a fifth step. It is my responsibility to keep that within the confines of our home. If my relationship with my partner were guided by this tradition, what would it be like? Where would I be? And that means that I don't take this, my relationship out, because see, if I start talking about my relationship to you, guess whose side of it you're getting? You're only getting my perception. So I think what's necessary is when I talk to somebody about our relationship, I talk about how I'm feeling about what's going on more than what Dave is doing. What would my mate say if I asked whether or not I loved him? I know what he would say. He would tell me that he loves me. I trust that. Does either of us have emotional scars from repeated heated controversy and struggles for power and control? You've already heard what Dave said. We have both said things in this relationship in the past 15 years that will never be forgotten. We have both forgiven each other, but there are things that will never be forgotten. And what I try to do today is I just try to sit a minute before I speak, because once I have said it, I can never take it back. How important is it for me to be right? It's getting to where it's not that important at all. Do I expect or need my partner to see and feel the same way as me on issues? I'm still working on that one, because I really do want Dave to see it my way. Do I let my partner disagree with my ideas without feeling rejected and without getting defensive? And I must say, that one is truly getting better. Tradition 11.
Okay, it says that we rely on attraction. Tradition 11 says that this is based on attraction rather than promotion, and that we need always maintain personal anonymity at the level of press, radio, and films. This says that we rely on our attraction to each other, and that my anonymity is mine to do with as I please, and that Polly's anonymity is hers with the same rules. So I don't try to hustle or jive Polly. That was my style in my other marriages. You know, I was always pulling some kind of hustle, and I continuously lied about where I was and who I was with and what I was doing, and it just never worked. You know, because even though my mate could not prove that I was lying, she knew it. You know, she just knew it. And she reacted that way. So, you know, so if you're trying to do that, you know, my advice is give it up. You know, we try very hard also not to take cheap shots at each other. You know, we have to be very careful about how you kid each other. You know, sometimes kidding is not really kidding. You get a little too close to a nerve and you like to give it a little poke sometimes. And, you know, so we try very hard not to do that. You know, there's another aspect of this tradition about attraction rather than promotion that that I want to bring up too, and that is that I need to be physically attractive to my partner. You know, and I'm talking about personal hygiene. You know, I owe it to my wife to shave and to bathe regularly and to, you know, and to wear clean clothes and to look presentable and, you know, or clean skin depending on what we're doing. But I don't believe I should embarrass or humiliate my wife in public by the way I'm dressed, you know, or by any kind of obscenity or any kind of vulgar, tasteless behavior of any kind, spoken or otherwise. So I think I have an obligation to my partner, you know, to be physically attractive as well as spiritual and all those other wonderful things. And you know, anonymity in a relationship is the ability, one of the things about it is it's the ability to do something good and not get caught, you know, and if you get caught, it doesn't count. And anonymity is keeping silent when your partner makes a mistake, you know, don't shove it up in their face and say, look what you did. And it's about saying encouraging things to your mate, you know, and encouraging them as you go along. There's just no room in a relationship for self-glorification and pride. You know, what makes me feel good is to watch Polly thrive. Our checklist here is, do I treat my relationship with care in public? Do I think my relationship is attractive to other people? You know, or does it appear shabby? Is my partner ever embarrassed or humiliated by my appearance or by my actions? And do I give relationships a bad name? Can I do good things for my relationship anonymously? Can I? And the next question is, do I? Do I do good things for my relationship anonymously? Can I give my partner the right to be wrong? And can I give my partner the right to be right? And what happens when my partner is getting noticeably better and I'm not? Sometimes I think that way, you know, Polly's getting better than me. She's recovering faster than me. God loves her more than me. And finally, which do I give more of to my partner? Positive strokes or negative zingers? And I like to think I give her more positive strokes. Put a lid on it, kiddo.
Tradition 12. Anonymity is the spiritual foundation of all our traditions, ever reminding us to place principles before personalities. And I must remember that this tradition says that selflessness is the spiritual foundation of all our relationships and reminds us to place principles before personalities. The principle and the institution of marriage is what we're talking about. The principle of love, the principle of unity, the principle of love. And that's what Dave and I are talking about. And when all else fails, I must remember that the principle of this marriage is so much more than the personality. Because you see, all those icky little things that I feel from time to time will pass. But how I treat this marriage in my heart. And today, this marriage is so important. To me, I believe that this marriage has been divinely blessed by God, and I treat this as the treasured gift that I believe that it is. I try to ask myself constantly, how do I talk about Dave in front of other people? And I try to remember that it is the principle of my marriage that I try to carry outside, and it is the principle of my marriage that I try to talk about, instead of the personalities and the things that we have that pass. And I have to remember that my mouth can destroy this marriage. And I also believe that we are examples of the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. It is because of a program called Alcoholics Anonymous that Dave and I have even had the blessing of this marriage. And how I treat this gift is my gift back to God, because this gift has been so freely given to me. And I think it's very important how Dave and I walk outside our house treating each other as we leave home, and how we go out in the community and act as sober people in the program of Alcoholics Anonymous in and out of these rooms as a married couple is very important. Because my actions speak so loudly, you cannot hear a word I say. And the checklist for step 12, is there a spiritual foundation in my relationship? If I ever forget who rules this relationship, the relationship is destroyed. Because this relationship is of God, and it is governed by God. Have we had a spiritual awakening? If Dave and I forget to pick up the 12 steps and individually work those, then the 12 traditions will not work in the relationship. And we hear this in meetings all the time, that the 12 traditions are to the group as the steps are to the individual. I need both. Do I place our common welfare first? What would happen to me if my mate disappeared? Do I treat my mate in a way that I'm proud of? And most of the time I can say yes, because it gives me great pleasure to say nice things about my husband. Do I treat my mate one way in public and another in private? And today, I believe both Dave and I seem to act outside our home the same as we act inside our home, and for that I'm grateful. Do I care if others see every aspect of how I treat my mate? And I guess today there's not much I do that you can't watch, and for that I'm really grateful. Do I have an immature need for attention and recognition? I still like to be the center of attention, so I guess I still have that. What is meant by discounting the message because of the messenger? I try not to judge the messenger today and just listen to the message, because the very people that I think can teach me nothing are usually the people who have taught me the most. Do I have a personal integrity? And I try very hard to have personal integrity in my relationship. Can I be true to my own beliefs? And I'm one of these people that says, if you don't stand for something, you'll fall for anything. So I'm really grateful today that I have beliefs and values, and I have learned those in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous. Is my relationship growing more healthy or getting sicker? And I would say that in the past 15 years, Dave and I have learned a lot, but we have only just begun. And if you want to do something that's just a wonderful treat to yourself, take the 12 traditions and work them in your relationship. And maybe it's not the relationship you have with a husband or a wife. Maybe you need to pick up these traditions and work them with your children or your parents, because I have definitely done the 12 traditions in other relationships, and I can tell you it's a wonderful, wonderful experience. And thank you so much for having Dave and I here and being able to share a little bit of our intimacy with you. Thanks a lot.
Thanks for listening. I hope you enjoyed the podcast. Sobercast is ad-free, and we'd like your help in order to keep it that way. So if you'd like to help us be self-supporting by pledging a dollar or two a month, visit Sobercast.com and look for the donate links. Thank you very much.